The chair would like to call to order the March 13th, 2001 meeting of the House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry. I'd like to welcome all of you here. Thank you for coming. And today we are going to start off with open a public hearing on House Bill 2164. And Ray, would you go ahead and share with us some of the recent developments and amendments here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill, House Bill 2164, came before the committee on February 8th, where you discussed forest trust lands, the 1999 budget note regarding this issue, and some potential amendments. Have two amendments before you. The Dash 1 amendments add an effective date of July 1, 2003, and the Dash 3 amendments add watershed assessments as a permissive use. Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Ray. At this time, the chair would like to call forward the Oregon Department of Forestry, Ray Craig, and Ross Holloway. Gentlemen, thank you. Welcome for coming today. Thank you for coming. Welcome. And for the record, say your name.
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, Ray Craig from the Assistant State Forester with the Department of Forestry, and with me is Ross Holloway, the program director of the State Forest Program. We appreciate the opportunity to return on this bill, and Ross will briefly summarize our statement.
Thank you, Ray. For the record, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ross Holloway, and I am the State Forest Program Director for the Oregon Department of Forestry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2164 today. This is legislation originally proposed by the Department of Forestry that would enable us to retain the interest on our Forest Development Fund and use that interest to help pay for non-revenue-generating forest management activities that we are engaged in. You have before you today two proposed amendments to this bill that have already been described, one adding the implementing language and the other adding watershed assessment as a permitted use for the additional monies. And we support both of those amendments as they are before you. The commitment to watershed assessments on these lands has been clearly articulated in the recently adopted forest management plans by the Board of Forestry, and the governor's recommended budget currently being considered includes additional resources or authorization to support that effort. Overall, I think we believe House Bill 2164 would enable us to have additional resources to support an increased focus on the management of these non-revenue generating resource values. And the new forest management plans that the board has adopted clearly provide that kind of a focus and a direction. So we believe that this bill with the proposed amendments would help establish stable funding to ensure that we can carry out those commitments. And again, we support the bill with the proposed amendments. And thank you for your time and consideration. If there's any questions, Ray and I'd be glad to answer them.
Okay, thank you. Representative Krieger, you have a question?
Regarding the whole issue that had to do with the county trust land, Tillamook class, and maybe some others, have you got support for this from the county?
Chair Krupp, Representative Krieger, yes, we do. We have a representative from the county in the audience. As a matter of fact, if you'd like to hear from him, I'm sure that would be appropriate if your choice. But yes, we do have, I would characterize, a strong support from the counties on this.
I just want to make sure it was made public that you do.
Representative King.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, I'm looking on Hannah Gross' amendments for House Bill 2164. And I see that we have written on our paper -1, -2, -3. It's my understanding that you're supporting the -1 and -3s, and that the -2s are redundant to one of the other amendments.
Chair Krupp, Representative King, that is correct. Yes, 3 is redundant to 2.
Okay, members, do we have any further questions, these two gentlemen? Thank you both. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you, Chair Krupp, members.
All right, at this time, the chair would like to call Jesse Backman. Uh, Thank you, Jesse, and welcome. I know that you've traveled over 100 miles to get here, and we appreciate your making the effort. And if you would, for the record, state your name.
My name is Jesse Backman, and I thank you, Chair and Representatives, for allowing me to speak before you today. I come to you not as I'm an employee of the Department of Forestry, but as a resident of Tillamook County.
Okay.
I first started using the Tillamook Forest, then was the Tillamook Burn when I was a lad. That was in 1963, not knowing that less than a decade before that this body, the legislative body, passed a bill allowing the Department of Forestry to reforest the Tillamook Burn. And since then, there has been thousands of people using the Tillamook for recreational opportunities, bringing cash and economic value into our community. And I support the passage of 2164 for exactly that reason. Part of our long-term goal as the Department of Forestry is to create all types of recreational facility and usage for the forest. And I hope this body has the same insight as we did in the 1950s on our bill.
Great. Thank you for your thoughts on that. Is the are you part of the effort for the Tillamook, and is it Interpretive Center or?
No, I work actually out of that prison facility.
Oh, you do? I see. There. I see.
We do reforestation work, and we actually do the maintenance of the state parks and the forestry parks. And probably has something to do with when they do build the Interpretive Center, but not as it's going to contract.
But do you think the Interpretive Center, which is a bit of a side issue, but still is getting at the direction you'd like to see forest be used for?
Okay. Absolutely, because it's very critical that this is a working forest, and it's very critical that people that come in and utilize it for recreational know that it's a working forest and understand the history of what it is and what it will be and what the goals are that we have to provide that.
Now, I agree. I think it's not only a great recreational opportunity, but it's a great economic development opportunity. But it's more than that, it's an educational opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think we ought to take those types of things. Members, do we have questions of Jesse?
No.
All right. Jesse, thank you. Appreciate you coming. All right. The chair doesn't see anyone else who signed up to testify. Is there anyone here who would like to share their thoughts on this issue? All right. Hearing none.
I will.
Representative Krieger, feel free.
I want to reference, maybe for information, the 6 years I spent working with the Department of Forestry and being on the Board of Forestry. I think something in the neighborhood of 2.5 to 3 years we spent developing the greatest permanent value and the purpose of the lands rule. We had hundreds and hundreds, in fact, I believe probably thousands, between people testify publicly at meetings through letters, emails, over a several-year period. And one of the questions that I had is that we developed into having a system called structure-based management that the forest, the Tillamook, and the Clatsop specifically were going to be managed by. And it was a new concept that had some people concerned as to whether it was something new that we couldn't depend on. I'm very, very comfortable with where the Department of Forestry has gone. We developed an HCP along with the Northwest Forest Plan for the state forest ground, again, over a 2 or 3 year period.
Now, Representative, what does that acronym stand for?
Habitat Conservation Plan.
Thank you.
And that was done for the purposes of the Endangered Species Act and to make sure we provided habitat and areas for endangered species and that we properly were going to be good stewards of that land with that concern. We recognized when we did it as a board that it was going to mean less dollars to the counties because there would be a different way you'd have to manage that land. It would be more conservative. But at the same time, we felt the benefit that society was going to get from clean air, water, fish and wildlife habitat, recreation, those type of things. We have interpretive programs going on there. And the governor came to us about a year, year and a half ago, and talked to us about watershed health, how important he felt it was, and the fact that we needed to be taking a look at watershed analysis as being one of the driving factors as part of that program. All of those things have increased the costs to the Department of Forestry to manage those lands. all of those things that we're talking about, I've mentioned, aren't necessary for the purpose of producing timber. They're societal values, and I think this is an opportunity for society to step up and be given the opportunity to help fund this forest, which is so important to all of Oregon, not just Clatsop County or Tillamook County. The adjacent metropolitan area uses that. They have the interpretive center online. They've got $1 million or so designated over a certain length of time for recreational benefits. I think we really should be taking a hard look at making sure that this does, in fact, pass.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate your thoughts. I know you're very knowledgeable in this area, and we take your thoughts very seriously. Representative Doyle would like to ask a question of Ray, if you'd come forward again for a moment. Thank you, Ray. Representative?
Thank you, Chair. And my apologies for coming in late, and I hope that this isn't being redundant. But, Ray, we've had discussions about the terms that are being added with the amendment regarding watershed assessment. And I wanted to just be sure that my understanding is correct, is that use of these terms does not in any way suggest that the watershed councils that are currently funded through OWIP will now see this as another funding source.
Chair Krupp, Representative Doyle, that is correct. The money, the proposal to use this money from this source would be strictly for state forest lands, to do watershed assessment on state forest lands. Now, certainly if an existing watershed council is looking at an area of similar concern, we may share costs, but there'd be no direct or any kind of a transfer of funds to watershed councils per se.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that satisfy your question, Representative?
It does.
All right. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it. At this time, the chair is going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2164 and open a work session on House Bill 2164.
Chair.
Representative Krieger.
To move House Bill 2164 with the dash one and I believe the dash three amendments.
That's correct. Dash one and dash three.
To the Revenue Committee.
Representative.
You want to have the dash one and three amendments added to the bill.
That is correct. And
move to the Revenue Committee. Or do you do it separate?
We need to do them separately in terms of adopting the amendments, and then we'll move the bill.
So I'd like to move then the dash one, the dash three amendments into the bill.
Okay, it has been so moved. Any discussion? Hearing none. Is there any objection to the moving the one and three amendments? Okay, so let it be ordered. The chair would entertain a motion to move the bill.
I would like to move the bill, House Bill 2164 with the dash one and three amendments to the Revenue Committee.
Correction, that would be to the Ways and Means, subsequent referral to Ways and Means. All right, it has been so moved. Any discussion?
Yes.
Representative Hobson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, colleagues, I'd like to tell you, first of all, of course, I'm very biased to this, but I'd also like to give due recognition to the Department of Forestry and to Representative Krieger, because I know he has been involved in this for so long. And one of the comments that I heard quite often in my area was that sometimes there's too much attention given to the whole forestry part and not enough attention given to the part of the recreational and the enjoyment value for the whole state. So I really want to speak in favor of it. It's really a good bill, and I encourage your vote, and let's get this puppy out of here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Vice Chair King, you have a question or a comment?
Comment. I just want to point out that to give some credit that Representative Nolan had detected that something that was intended to be in the legislation kind of got left out, and she brought it forward, and Chair Krupp also worked with seeing that same amendment, and I appreciate both of them.
Thank you, Representative. The chair would also like to acknowledge Representative Nolan and certainly her staff and ODF and the other interested parties that were involved in the negotiations here. We thank you for your cooperative effort. And with that, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
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 Vice Chair King?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
She's excused.
Chair Crook?
Aye. House Bill 2164 is hereby subsequently referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass as amended. And the chair will close a public or a work session on House Bill 2164 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2200. Ray, would you share with us where we are on this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2200 came before the committee on February 8th of this year. The issues discussed during that meeting were carbon offsets, photosynthesis, carbon dioxide, sustainable forestry, creation of new forest lands, conservation efforts, and potential amendments. We do have a dash one amendment, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and what that does is establish two separate forestry carbon offset program options, a program for the Board of Forestry and Common School Fund for state forest lands, and a program where non-federal forest land owners can voluntarily choose the state forester to market and sell forestry carbon offsets on their behalf. The amendment clarifies what's meant by forest management activities not required by existing law, so as not to prohibit voluntary forest management practices. It allows for more funds from the sale of forestry carbon offsets to pass back to non-federal landowners participating in the voluntary program, and revises the definition of forestry carbon offsets. The amendment makes the proposed carbon accounting system a requirement for ODF programs, adds a third requirement relating to sustainable co-benefits of the program by adding protection or enhancement of long-term timber sales, native fish and wildlife habitat, and water quality, the issues that must be considered for program implementation. The amendment establishes an advisory committee for the Board of Forestry rulemaking relative to forestry carbon offsets and clarifies that forestry carbon offset programs established independent of the Department of Forestry remain a flexible alternative. Also, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're being passed out the revenue impact statements provided by legislative revenue at the beginning of this hearing. That also goes with the fiscal impact statement that we received back on February 8th, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Ray. We appreciate those thoughts. The chair would like to call Oregon Department of Forestry, Ray Craig, and Dr. Cathcart, if you'd come forward, please. Welcome to you both, and for the record, state your names.
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, Ray Craig, Assistant State Forester with the Department of Forestry, and with me is Jim Cathcart, the manager of our Forest Resource Trust. Since our hearing that we had earlier with you, we've made extensive contacts with people that have had been interested in this bill, and we've addressed many of the concerns that people had, and we've redrafted the bill, and that is the amendments in front of you. And we are very proud of this bill and think it's a much better bill than before. And Jim, I wonder if you might just summarize the changes.
Okay. Chairman Krupp, members of the committee, my name is Dr. James F. Cathcart, Forest Resource Trust Manager with the Oregon Department of Forestry. Today, I appreciate the opportunity to testify further on this bill and in support of this bill. We are proposing these amendments and ask for their full consideration by the committee. The amendments were developed in collaboration with American Lands Alliance and the Renewable Northwest Project, two organizations that expressed strong interest in this legislation. And while we did not achieve consensus on our proposed amendments, I feel everybody felt that the discussions were productive and constructive and led to many improvements in this bill. And I do want to acknowledge Peter West of Renewable Northwest Project and Darcy Davis of American Land. Peter's involvement really helped us stay on task, and the changes that you're looking at, that task was to make sure that any standards regarding forestry carbon offsets were a quality standard that meet the needs of purchasers. And again, I think everybody feels that our time was well spent, even though we didn't end up agreeing on some of the specifics. In general, what these two amendments do are two things. One, they add language that provides assurances that any statewide principles and standards for the forestry carbon offsets promote quality offsets that meet the needs of offset purchasers, as well as serve as an incentive for non-federal landowners to implement forest management practices that provide environmental, social, and economic benefits to Oregon. The second thing that the amendments do is actually we recognize the need that we just kind of had to reorganize this bill so it was clear as to which sections relate to the Oregon Department of Forestry programs established by the state foresters and which sections relate to the statewide rulemaking by the Oregon Board of Forestry. Now, I just want to recap a little bit. There may be some people who didn't hear the first hearing. A forestry carbon offset is a paper commodity that represents a measured amount of carbon storage arising from a forestry practice or action that gives rise to that increased carbon storage. Forestry carbon offsets are backed up by a carbon accounting system that tracks and monitors where the carbon storage is occurring and the types of practices that are implementing it or creating it. Third-party verifiers, a new term that you'll see in the amendment, those are persons or organizations that work independently or perhaps on behalf of purchasers to audit the carbon accounting system to verify what is being reported by sellers is actually what is happening. Right now, the sale and exchange of forestry carbon offsets is through negotiation. Activities giving rise to offsets really cannot occur until the negotiations are complete and a contract or an agreement entered. And a good example of this right now is the Climate Trust $5.5 million request for proposal for carbon offset projects, forestry or otherwise, and that RFP process may take a year to complete. So the landowner really cannot initiate anything until that negotiation is completed. House Bill 2200 anticipates the day when we might have what I call our Saturday market for forestry carbon offsets. This idea is that landowners go ahead and make the investments that give rise to forestry carbon offsets. The offsets are tracked in the carbon accounting system, and then they are brought to market, to the Saturday market, for sale or exchange. There is no waiting. The price is set by the quality of the offset as verified by the third-party verifiers. So again, what we're talking about in this legislation is that we're looking ahead towards when there's actually exchange markets for these type of commodities. The amendment, I'm just a little more detailed on that. Most of the amendments are concentrated in the section that speaks to the Board of Forestry's rulemaking of developing a standard for forestry carbon offset. The key change that happened there is that standards for forestry carbon offsets will promote not only activities that increase carbon storage and would not otherwise occur, but the activities also have to have a co-benefit that provides for an environmental, social, or economic benefit for Oregon. Benefits such as long-term timber supplies, native fish and wildlife habitat, and water quality. The second thing that the amendments do is that we list out a set of principles that the rulemaking by the Board of Forestry needs to address. These principles need to ensure that accounting systems shall account for both debit for emissions and credits for sequestered and stored. So we're looking at the full carbon cycle of the activity. They account for the duration or the permanence of the carbon offset. They establish an appropriate baseline from which to measure the change in carbon storage. The accounting system needs to account for relevant and measurable greenhouse gas consequences as appropriate. There may be some circumstances that other greenhouse gases besides carbon dioxide need to be tracked. They need to account for the specific forest management practices used on the site. They need to monitor the emissions and the sequestration and storage from implementing these practices. They need to account for the emissions and storage based on what is harvested from the forest, like if we have solid wood products, that's another carbon pool that we need to keep track of its fate. We need to account for the environmental, social, and economic co-benefits of the forest and forest lands. The accounting system needs to ensure that any practices with long-term, unsustainable consequences are not counted. I want to just emphasize here, what we're really trying to do is create an incentive for landowners to improve the management of their land beyond what is required by regulation. We don't want to get so myopic on carbon storage that we create some kind of perverse incentive for an undesirable, unsustainable outcome on the landscape. So the accounting system needs to, you know, kind of keep an eye out for that. We want to ensure that any practices, we want to allow public information access to monitoring reports, and the carbon accounting systems should be designed to encourage third-party verification of the forestry carbon offset. So those are the substantive changes in the bill as proposed in our amendments. Again, in my written testimony, I kind of walked through how the bill was reorganized and how the sections speak to the different programs. In summary, our proposed amendments to House Bill 2200 really strengthened this legislation. I think we came here with a good piece of legislation, and through our discussions, we even have a better piece of legislation. What the bill will do in aggregate is that it allows for the development through rule by the Oregon Board of Forestry, statewide standards and accounting principles for forestry carbon offsets. The way the bill is structured is that the board does not have to act on this. In fact, what a likely outcome might be is that the board will look at the Department of Forestry when it develops its accounting system to gain some experience about how we provide for these college quality assurances. That's our intent when we develop the accounting system, that we will look at the same list that the Board of Forestry needs to look at and try to meet those assurances. We also, and when this bill passed, it requires that the State Forester does develop that accounting system and meet that intent to provide those quality assurances. We will establish two new programs by the State Forester, one for state lands and one for the voluntary participation of non-federal forest landowners. And then we will establish the same authority for the State Forester to sell forestry carbon offsets for the program I manage, the Forest Resource Trust. So this is, I really feel good about where we're at with this bill. We've learned a lot over the last few weeks, and I hope we can get a due pass recommendation from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Question for you. Obviously, this program is being set up for the benefit of the state, but also does benefit private landowners additionally, correct?
That's correct. One of the programs established by the State Forester is specifically designed to allow landowners to choose the Department of Forestry as a market representative. The idea there is that an individual landowner may generate some carbon offsets, but not enough to attract the attention. But if we can pool those up into a larger pool and market those collectively for a group of landowners, then we see this as a way for landowners to get plugged into these markets.
If I could,
certainly, Ray, please
add on to Jim's comments. The Board of Forestry has discussed in the last several years the concept of how to achieve the broader goals of the forestry program for Oregon, and many of those discussions center around offering incentives to landowners in terms of management of their lands. And during this whole discussion, it appears like the incentive market is sort of going down. The federal funds, we have quite a bit less federal funds now, for example, than we did 5 or 10 years ago. So in addition to the carbon the things that Jim talked about, also we see this as a tremendous opportunity across the landscape in terms of managing the forest lands, because there's money involved, you know, for the landowner to do things that the landowner might not otherwise get done, so that we feel they benefit, and then of course the state benefits because the forestry program for Oregon does in fact address landscape, you know, across the landscape, economic, environmental, and social values.
And then of course ultimately the environment
benefits
because we continue to plant more trees.
Absolutely.
So, again, understanding that the criteria for this program is that you're going to take land that's currently not in production and plant it into a new production. Are there other opportunities in here for land that is in production to also be counted as carbon offset?
Chairman Krupp, members of the committee, yes, this program is not restricted to that one example of underproducing land going back into forest. Any forest management activity that increases the carbon storage ability of the forest, either through maybe extending the rotation age that the landowner is managing, doing thinnings that increase the biomass in the forest or stabilize it from risk from wildfire loss, as long as that we can measure the increase in carbon storage resulting from that activity, and that activity is motivated in part because of the incentive provided by the potential sale of carbon offset, and if that activity provides a co-benefit in terms of an environmental, economic, or social benefit, then it would be recognized under this legislation.
Okay. Members, questions? Wow. Thank you, gentlemen. We do appreciate you coming today.
Thank you, Chair Krupp, members.
Thank you.
All right. The chair would like to call Peter West from the Renewable Northwest Project. Peter, if you'd come forward, please. Welcome, and for the record, state your name.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I'm Peter West. I'm the Green Power Director for the Renewable Northwest Project. We were one of the groups that asked to negotiate amendments to this, and I appreciate the committee's patience with us. For those who don't know, the Renewable Northwest Project is a unique regional organization comprised of environmental groups, consumer organizations, and developers and suppliers of renewable energy, solar, wind, and geothermal. RMP helped to establish Oregon's landmark carbon dioxide standards back in 1997 and was instrumental in launching the Climate Trust. It was known as the Oregon Climate Trust at that time. Today it's the Climate Trust. And that organization's purpose is to develop carbon offset projects. I was the founding co-chair of the Climate Trust, and I negotiated the first set of carbon offset projects for the trust. I have to say, I negotiated several forestry carbon offset projects. I'm also an advocate for wind and solar and geothermal, but I've also, in my short career as a climate trust person, bought offsets. So RMP's interest, my interest, has always been in making a very workable bill. Renewables, because they have few air emissions and can display sturdier resources, have significant carbon offsets. And high-quality standards for carbon sequestration can serve, in my opinion, as strong companions to energy-related carbon offsets. However, poor standards would undercut the emerging market in carbon offsets and diminish our efforts on the energy side to find economic value for environmental goods. RMP sought a bill with clearer responsibilities, more specific accounting of offsets, greater opportunity for expert input, and an explicit understanding that these standards, when they go statewide, if they do go statewide, are voluntary, that a third party can opt in, it can opt out. A purchaser could follow these. A purchaser who might believe they had a better standard could use their own judgment. The proposed amendments accomplish those requirements, and they also clarify the intent of the department. And it is particularly reassuring to me that the Department of Forestry, in Jim Cathcart's testimony, agreed that one of the intents of this bill is to have the department work through the issues and get them right and work and struggle to get the accounting in place before we tackle standards statewide. That they will do the dry run is very important to us. We've participated in crafting these proposed amendments in a series of very fruitful negotiations with the Department of Forestry and also American Land. I have to tell you, it has been an open, professional, and positive process. While we disagreed, we weren't disagreeable to each other. The amendments before you make the original bill more clearly in tune with the needs of my constituents. While we did not agree on everything with the department, I believe we agreed on enough in these amendments to create the conditions for success. I ask you today to adopt these amendments and support the amended and recrafted House Bill 2200. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Members, do we have questions of Peter? Well, Peter, you also get off lucky today. Thank you for coming. I appreciate your participation in this process. The chair would like to call Darcy Davis. Darcy, come forward, if you would, from the American Lands Alliance. Welcome, Darcy, and for the record, state your name.
For the record, my name is Darcy Davis, and I represent American Lands Alliance of Portland, Oregon. Also, informally, I represent my colleague, Daniel Hall, who testified together with me during the first hearing and is unable to be here today. As noted in our testimony on February 8th, we support many of the concepts in House Bill 2200. And the creation of programs that encourage forest landowners to adopt more sustainable forest protection and management practices as part of a broader strategy to address climate change. It is essential that carbon sequestration policies and programs include standards for comprehensive, accurate, and credible greenhouse gas accounting. It is also necessary that carbon programs safeguard natural resource values from potential unintended consequences which may arise from projects that are otherwise beneficial from a narrow climate perspective. We support the Oregon Department of Forestry's amendments to House Bill 2200 and appreciate the department's interest in establishing a credible sequestration program. We do have some significant remaining concerns with House Bill 2200 and are hopeful that these concerns will be addressed as the bill moves forward through legislative and administrative rulemaking processes. In particular, we would prefer that the establishment of statewide rules regarding carbon sequestration and agreements between non-federal landowners and the state would be overseen by a multi-agency task force, since climate change and sequestration involves issues and resources that go far beyond strictly forestry. The advisory committee included in the department's amendments begins to address this need. However, we remain concerned that the proposed rules are ultimately governed principally by the Board of Forestry, which is knowledgeable, of course, of primarily forestry issues. Since carbon sequestration would be achieved in the interest of mitigating climate change, it is necessary that Oregon's climate-related agencies have a direct influence in the development of House Bill 2200. The multi-agency task force should be composed of the Board of Forestry and the oversight boards of those state agencies included in the department's proposed advisory board, which includes the Climate Trust, the Oregon Department of Energy, Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Also, I would like to note that as a very last-minute suggestion and thought from Daniel Hall, my colleague who is in Washington, D.C., he called me up just before the hearing to suggest that I also address the idea of at a minimum, this isn't in my written testimony, but at a minimum, we would like to see that the current advisory committee be staffed jointly by the Board of Forestry and the Department of Energy. Another solution could be that a formal comment period be given to the various above-mentioned Oregon agencies and that the Board of Forestry reviews these carbon-related concerns from state agencies before the rules are adopted. This would be a way of addressing this concern of ours. We are also unsure whether the time is right for the establishment of statewide sequestration rules due to unresolved international climate negotiations regarding specifically carbon sequestration. However, we note that House Bill 2200 simply authorizes the establishment of such rules and does not mandate them. Again, we support the types of landowner incentives and sequestration programs also involved in this bill. It is in Oregon's best interest that priority be given to carbon offset projects that secure and restore habitat for endangered fish and wildlife. For this reason, we would prefer that House Bill 2200 be more explicit about the types of forest management and restoration operations which will be encouraged by the proposed offsets program, and also about the types of environmental safeguards that are needed to guard against unintended consequences. For the record, the types of projects which would be most beneficial for the climate, forest productivity, fish and wildlife habitat, and water quality include the adoption of timber rotations which exceed the culmination of mean annual increment, and the restoration and protection of riparian buffers and watersheds which serve as aquatic refugia. We recommend that environmental safeguards that include the prohibition of the use of genetically engineered trees, prohibitions on the conversion of native forests and other native ecosystems to plantations, and the use of impact assessments be addressed. On the other hand, certain carbon sequestering practices which result in environmental harm should not be eligible for funding. Impact assessments are the best way to prevent harmful practices that include the use of genetically engineered trees and the conversion of native ecosystems to result. In summary, we believe that carbon sequestration is a promising opportunity to simultaneously achieve benefits for landowners, fish and wildlife, and climate, and specifically with minimal use of state funds. We feel that a joint program between the above-mentioned departments would best engage the expertise within the state towards realizing this promise. We thank the Oregon Department of Forestry, specifically Jim Cathcart, for its consideration of our views, and the committee for this opportunity to testify. We look forward to continuing the work with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Darcy. Members, do we have Representative Doyle? You have a question.
Sure. Darcy, American Lands Alliance, is the Sierra Club part of your alliance?
Chairman Kraft, Representative Doyle, no, the Sierra Club is not part of our alliance.
Okay. Follow up?
Certainly.
Are you aware of any concerns that they may have with going in this direction?
Representative Krupp, Chairman Krupp, Representative Doyle, this issue, as I alluded to in my testimony, has been a very contentious issue at the international level. And there are issues that have been concerns of the Sierra Club as well as other high-profile organizations like the World Wildlife Fund and so forth. And most of these concerns, I believe from my experience, are based on very different types of proposals that have addressed carbon sequestration. For example, the U.S. administration's proposal, the former U.S. administration's proposal during the last round of climate change negotiations, it was nowhere near as good as this bill is. It basically was going to give the United States credit for doing nothing above the normal standard. And this bill in and of itself goes beyond those those practices that are already existing. And so I can't speak on behalf of the Sierra Club, but I do believe that the some of the issues that they have been concerned with are not to be considered within this bill.
Okay, thank you.
Question?
Yes. Representative Smith.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Who else is doing this?
Representative, perhaps Representative Smith. Well, the interesting thing is that American Lands Alliance is, as far as I know, one of the only organizations that is really working specifically with climate change and forestry issues. There are a couple of groups that we work with, very much the minority, but there are groups that we work with in Washington, D.C. that are agreeable with our position, but they don't necessarily work on the same level that we do with this issue.
Follow up.
Certainly.
Are there any states or agencies or countries on the face of the planet that's doing this?
Chairman Krupp, Representative Smith, I believe that there are groups out there that are quite potentially working on this. As to my work together with other organizations, I don't know of any specifically within, we have had support of our position from different groups around the world and here nationally, but not.
So Oregon is really an experiment.
Yes, it's very much an experiment, and it's a very, very important precedent, and that's one of the reasons why we are so critical of this issue, because as the others, Jim and Peter West have brought up, this since this is such an important precedent, if we don't make the precedent set well, then we could eventually harm the whole process of making this very good credit-based incentive to move forward. And that's one of the reasons why in my testimony I addressed the issue of timing and the fact that international negotiations basically fell apart as a result of this issue being brought up, and brought up in a very poor policy standard, I believe, but it fell apart nonetheless as a result of this issue. And until those issues are addressed at the international level, it's difficult to tell what type of a market, if any, will actually occur here at the state level. And so if we go forward on this issue and don't do it to standards that both meet forest concerns as well as particularly climate change concerns, we don't address them both simultaneously, then we really run the risk of kind of shooting ourselves in the foot and not letting this this very positive idea move forward, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Quite welcome. Members, Representative King.
Your statement, prohibition on use of genetically injured trees, is pretty broad. Can you give me a little more focus on that?
Chairman Krupp, Representative King, yes, but it is a very broad statement, and mainly that is because the potential use of genetically engineered trees could be extremely vast, particularly in this domain, considering the fact that I think lots of people could dream up technical solutions. One of them could likely be that a tree would be developed that would be able to sequester carbon at an increased rate above natural and native ecosystems. And just because those trees may increase the sequestration and storage values in Oregon doesn't necessarily mean that it will make our forests healthier or our fish and wildlife habitats improve.
Are you saying that your position is against, for example, DA cloning of trees as versus working with trees to get better genetic selection?
Chairman Krupp, Representative King, I can say that I'm not an expert on the side of the genetically engineered issues, and there is a line between the manipulation of genes that has happened through crossbreeding and things along those lines, which has been going on for a very long time at this point, and then the outright manipulation of taking genes that would not normally be in a natural tree and inserting them or making up new ones, perhaps. And we have a fear that these techniques could alter the state of the environment and crossbreed with natural and native species that we would like to see thrive in their normal habitat.
So was that a yes?
Yes, I guess.
Thank you. Then you were also saying that, and I'm asking these questions in part because you feel that the Oregon experiment is so important,
mm-hmm.
That certain carbon sequestering practices result in environmental harm. Can you give an example or an anecdote or two?
Sure. Chairman Krupp, Representative King, for example, one of the other example that I'd given aside from the genetically engineered trees issue is the conversion of native species or native habitats, and that, for example, if it wasn't addressed correctly within this bill, either through legislative session or in rulemaking, perhaps, that we could run the risk of taking ecosystems, grasslands, for example, out in eastern Oregon and converting them into forests that would not have normally been there, and then perhaps irrigating or doing extensive work to be able to maintain these habitats that wouldn't normally naturally be there, and this is one of our concerns.
All right, members, do we have additional questions? All right, hearing none. Thank you, Darcy. Thanks for coming today. We appreciate it. The chair would normally call Sybil Ackerman, but I don't think she's in the room, is she? No, I don't see her. All right. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2200? Hearing none, the chair will close the public hearing on House Bill 2200 and open a work session on House Bill 2200. And the chair would entertain the moving of the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
I'll move the Dash 1 amendments.
I was hoping you would. All right, members, the Dash 1 amendments have it's been moved that we amend them into House Bill 2200. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair would entertain a motion to do pass or recommend we refer this. It has to go to Ways and Means, by the way. So, Representative Nolan?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Nolan moves House Bill 2200 as amended with a do pass to be subsequently referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Excused.
Chair Krupp?
Aye. House Bill 2200 is hereby subsequently referred to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended with a due pass. We're going to close the work session, House Bill 2200. And members, we are adjourned, and thank you all for coming.
Good work.